Anjum, take it away.
Okay. Hi, Nancy. Welcome again to the ALEX FinTech podcast. So we're just going to talk a bit about your journey today and, you know, just some issues around the fintech sector in Nigeria today.
Okay.
So you've been working in the financial services industry for about 9 years now. What has the journey been like so far?
I'm not sure I can summarize the journey, but I'll try. It has been interesting, I would say, you know, from advising before a second. So from advising corporations on how to get finances, as well as advising high net worth individuals on how they can invest, manage their investments as well, to moving down to providing the smallest of financing to anyone in Nigeria has been great, I would say. And this is because, I mean, growing up in an economy where there were little or no financial assistance whatsoever was what really grew my interest into delving more into this space, you know, because you want to buy a car, you're paying cash directly. You want to rent a house, you have to pay in full. You want to buy a flight ticket, you're paying in full. But as I currently speak to you, we have where you can buy now and pay later. You can pay in installments and you can also rent small. So it has really been an interesting journey.
Yeah, it definitely sounds interesting, you know, to have moved from big corporations to high net worth individuals to small scale businesses. That sounds very interesting and very impressive. So what has the transition from traditional finance at Planet Capital to fintech been like? And what transferable skills did you gain at Planet Capital that were instrumental to your success at OP?
Thank you very much for this question. So transitioning from the traditional finance where we have processes and procedures in place, you know, you see similarities between different SECs in different countries, and then moving to a fast-paced, innovative and a dynamic space, you know, has been mind-blowing, I would say. I mean, what is more exciting is being able to play in the digital transformation. You know, I get to advise, provide legal and regulatory advice on issues that concerns different types of technology. I'm talking about from Bitcoin to blockchain, cryptocurrency to crowdfunding, Internet of Things to artificial intelligence, digital assets, as well as smart contracts and autonomous vehicle is really, really interesting. Have there been skills that you could transfer from, say, the traditional finance to fintech or digital economy space? Yes, because in both of them, you get to see or get to play, you know, you have to manage risks. So your risk management skills comes in here, regulatory management, stakeholder management, of course. You already know how many professional parties play in a single transaction in the traditional finance space. So you can imagine how such skills will also play in the fintech space. Your negotiation skills will also come in handy, as well as your communication skills, because you have to communicate your products.
So it's very interesting to me that you said you moved from traditional finance to fintech, and fintech is really fast paced. I mean, one would think that being at a firm like Planet Capital would be more fast paced than being in a startup. So I mean, which is faster, since you've obviously had the best of both worlds?
So it depends. Now, when I say faster, is because you're having new products being developed on a quarterly basis, and a lot trying to catch up. So for traditional finance, there's already a process or a procedure in place. Say you want to do IPO, you want to do debt advising or equity advising, there's something in place, there's something to follow. But for something where, for fintech, where you say, I'm creating a product where you can buy your flight ticket at a later, maybe after you finish traveling, and you don't have that law in place. So it's fast-paced, faster than what we have in play. You get, so you have to bring your regulator up to speed, as well as convincing your business team that, okay, we still need to play by the books, even though there's no book, since it's a developing space.
Yeah. I completely get that. Yeah. Okay. So, well, so far, what would you say has been the most challenging aspect of your career?
The regulatory space, I would say. I say that because countries and laws, I wouldn't just restrict myself to Nigeria, are still catching up. Some have been faster than some. And I'll still say regulatory because, you know, you sit with the business team or the product team and they relay their visions, their plans to you on certain products, and you try to take that vision and plan to the regulator. You know, you're interacting with the regulators and trying to make them see reasons how this would play. They also, that is the regulators, would also be giving you their own guidance as well as their statements on how things should be or how things should not be. So in that process, we are always in a go-no-go. So it's either a decision is made or it's not made. Sometimes you get to see where one person says, oh yeah, it will fly, and then he changes a department in the same regulatory office, and another person says no. So this stops it up for us. And in addition, when we have prospective clients that we are proposing solutions to, the lawyers of these prospective clients tend to pose a little bit of challenge to us. And this is because they are yet to understand how these products will work, forgetting the fact that they are not just there to protect their client, but to also have it at the back of their mind that they need to make sure their client is also making money. So these are part of the challenges we get to face.
So you think that as a lawyer beyond the regulatory side, you think that as a lawyer is important to not just know the law, but to also have a proper understanding of the product. Would you say that's something that's important?
It's key. It's key. Mm. I think it comes first. And I'll say this because I think what really made me move from the legal side of financing first to the market side was because I understand that businessmen are more comfortable with a lawyer who understands how their business work, you know? So I'm not just here to protect you against the law, but to also make sure that as I'm protecting you, you're making money. So they are more comfortable with someone who understands their business very well and will know how to even protect them better than someone who is just a great lawyer.
Yes, that definitely sounds like solid advice. That definitely sounds like a plus key. Okay. So, I mean, you're not just leading the legal department of a payment system, but also a subsidiary of a publicly traded company and unicorn. This must surely come with a lot of pressure. How do you handle that?
Is there a one-way answer? I wouldn't say. But I think what has worked for me is the fact that my legal and risk portfolio in my current roles, as well as my previous role, have given me a practical understanding how organizations operate, you know, their corporate, their governance structure to effectively protect their interests first, as well as the society at large. So with this, I would ultimately apply a consultative risk-based approach in building confidence as well as engaging key stakeholders, right? And in that process, it will result to me having a risk-free engagement. So I think these are part of the things that have really helped me in handling such pressures.
So I can't help but notice that you mentioned risk a number of times. Do you think that this is a core skill to have in this industry, you know, as a fintech lawyer or as a lawyer in finance? Do you think this is a key skill to have? Is it a very important skill to have?
It's the first skill I'll say anyone should have.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Because what happens is, why are you coming to me? Why would you be coming to me if it's not for the lawyer to tell you this is what you may face, or these are the unforeseen circumstances that we may face in the future, right? So without having this risk, you need to understand that risk management is core. So for each business or each industry, you need to first of all find this risk. Sometimes it's not something you can do alone, and you may want to also engage subject experts. That's why your network will also help. But without risk, I wouldn't just even restrict it to just lawyers, for any business, any occupation at all.
Okay. Definitely sounds like another very valuable advice, very, very valuable insight. Okay, so let's move a bit more to the industry. So the country is currently facing a naira scarcity, and at some point, mobile banking and POS services were also unavailable. So while this scarcity may have represented an opportunity for tech companies operating in the fintech solution sector, it also revealed a huge gap and a need for wider inclusion. How do you think we can innovate to incorporate these categories of merchants who are still very cash reliant into the e-payment network?
I think there's a gap we need to close before we delve into innovating products, because I can tell you for free that there are products available for such type of merchants. But the problem is the trust. Now, the trust in what? The trust in our banking system and the banking infrastructure. Now, each fintech player in Nigeria holds a license. And from the regulations and the guidelines from the Apex regulator, you would see that each fintech player would still need to run their infrastructure through the commercial banks. No matter the product you have, it will still go through the commercial banks. I do not want to mention we have a cabal with the commercial banks, no. But I think infrastructures can be improved, because even while we are in this period where there's the unavailability of bank services or mobile money services, this is because there have been restrictions to these players. So first of all, I think they need to ease up the rigidity around the permissible activities for these players, improve the infrastructure the banks play in, and also increase the trust. Both of us still believe in the bank, but do we have 100% trust in the infrastructure? I can tell you Nenjom and Nancy does not, but we understand how it works and we have the patience. Not to talk about someone who does not have any trust at all in the banking system. We can innovate this product for this merchant and tell them, yes, there are these products, but guess what? It still circles back to the fact that they need to still get their money from the bank. They need to still get their money anyhow through the banks. Currently, there are buy now, pay later products where, say, the street trader on my street can be selling a product, and I can tell him, I can approach him and let him know that there's a product where you don't have to go after the people that are owing you. Tell them to buy the things you sell through me. Now, what happens is I give them those things on credit. I now have to reimburse this street trader that I am standing in as the middleman, who will collect the cash on his behalf and also pay it to him. Now, when I tell him there's an easier way for me to get his money, he's happy. But how do I still give it to him? I wouldn't want to give him cash. I will still need to go through with the bank. So we need to build that trust around a trusted infrastructure, ease the guidelines for these players, the rigidity around their permissible activities, so that they can develop more products, or maybe create infrastructures and processes and guidelines that wouldn't tell them you must go through an acquiring bank, which are usually the commercial banks.
Guys, but I mean, currently in the status quo, some people would argue that we already have PSBs, payment service banks, which are essentially geared towards these categories of people. So, I mean, do you think that is like there's still some lack of efficacy, or the payment service banks are not just widespread enough? Like, I mean, the point I'm trying to make is that we have like that group of people are sort of already catered to. What really is the issue? Is it a lack of reach problem, or it still boils down to the trust? And if it still boils down to the trust, yes, then in light of this entire like cash scarcity again, where merchants are unable to even get money from banks, like that's going to further widen the trust gap between the financial institutions and the people. So how do we even as a people fix that? Because we need to have these conversations if we're going to, fully talk about how we can integrate these people into the system.
I get your points, but your last point about we as a people to fix it, it is beyond us because it's a regulated space.
Yes. So, yes, true.
Like I mentioned before, even the PSBs that we thought in anticipation were going to come and, ease these restrictions we thought you still need to have to go through the commercial banks, is not so. There is still an infrastructure or there's still a process where whatever they do is still moves or flows through the commercial banks. I'm sorry, but that is it.
Right.
So if the infrastructure efficacy can be there, each player can be very active, you know, smart, proactive, whatever it is about their business. But if we are still guided by what the APEX regulator has provided us to do, that is why I say they need to ease up the rigidity. Now, there are some people who can hold funds and some who cannot hold funds. We don't have a lot of percentage of those license holders who can hold funds. Just the PSBs and the MMOs. That's the mobile money operators.
Yeah.
And even as at that, they still have an acquiring bank who holds these funds on their behalf with a collateral sum being paid. So we are still held up by the regulation. So if the regulators are telling, have structured it in a way where we still need to go through the commercial banks as the end player or as one of the players in this space, then we need to increase that trust. Trust around the infrastructure, trust around the services, trust around how effective the services will be.
Okay, thank you very much. I completely understand your point now. Okay, so what's it like balancing your multiple and demanding work roles? Are there any conflicts and how do you resolve them? I know that you're currently doing like lots of work in legal, but I mean, listening to you speak, I can also tell that you're also working a lot with products as well. So how are you balancing everything? Because I mean, it must definitely be very demanding.
Yes, it is, you know. I think this is where your time management skills come into play, you know, because without that, I'm not sure you'll be able to meet up with your demanding tasks. And like we always say, no man is an island. So your team will have a role to play here. How do you also manage people? These are some of the things that I know that have helped, especially in resolving conflicts, because if you have a good people management skills, then this should go a long way in resolving any conflicts. I hope this helps.
Yeah, yes, it does, especially the bit on time management and people management. That's definitely very, very, very important. Leadership, essentially leadership. Okay. Well, how do you see the role of women in development of the tech sector in Nigeria? What's your take on that?
I was expecting this question since I'm a woman. So I think it has we as women and yourself included, we have a role to play. And I'll say this because, you know, research has it that having women in leadership in an economy also improves an economy's GDP, you know. And statistics also shows that an economy loses when women don't participate in the labor force. For instance, the Asian and the Pacific countries lose about, I think, approximately $47 billion yearly by having low labor force participation by women. And currently, women in the tech space in Nigeria, about 22% of the engineering and technology graduates are women on a yearly basis. I think this data was shared by the National Bureau of Statistics. So this alone is a very small percentage, you know, to compare with other players or the other space or men in particular.
Yeah.
And for an economy to grow, we need to have more women. You know, they come with increased skills, you know, so many things to add. And I believe the women in tech, organization we have in Nigeria are also playing important roles to have this inclusion done. And I'll speak specifically to, you know, the female lawyers also, that we need to have a a mind that is flexible. We need to have a mind that is flexible to delve into new and novel projects, you know, especially where the law is unsettled, so that we can also contribute in this space. There's a lot to influence. There's a lot to do and also influence, and you don't know what your contributions can be like and how long they would grow in developing this space. So I would say our participation is key and we need to do more. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I completely agree with you. I mean, historically, this is not a sector that women have really, really played in. And I definitely agree that we have capacity to not just do a lot, but to also lead as well. And it's actually very graceful, you know, younger lawyers like myself to see people like you leading companies like Jumia, for instance. It definitely does a lot in terms of, you know, giving us role models and giving us people to aspire to, essentially. And I'm pretty sure that like people will be inspired by people like you, and a lot more women would like definitely come into the tech space in the future. I mean, from now and in the future, of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time. This has been a very interesting and very insightful conversation. It's been lovely speaking to you.
Thank you too for your time, and thank you for having me. I also thank the ALEX firm for having me on this podcast.
Thank you. We're very happy too. Thank you so much.
Thank you.